Accession number 18018, reel 3.
Did you pull in reel 3?
One interesting little job we had was that they were clearing out villages behind our front line because they could obviously harbour any North Koreans or Chinese that might or might not infiltrate through. And so I got the job of clearing this particular village. This particular village, not very large, I suppose, 100 or so people, less, had a brothel in it. And I gather the brothel were maintained by the police who had their headquarters in a nearby village. They were the main users. And by golly, did those girls play us up? First of all, they had to be in their travelling clothes. They didn't want to travel in the clothes that they were wearing. And so they insisted on changing into their travelling clothes, which they did in front of us, like the soldiers. And they didn't hurry it either. Young blighters. They really were being at their tantalising worst, or one might say best. Anyway, we eventually got them in with much giggling and chuckling into three-ton lorries. There was one old lady sitting cross-legged in front of her charcoal fire, and she wasn't going to move. That's where she lived, that was her house, and she wasn't going to leave it. So in fact, we got obviously the tail board of the three-tonner was down. But we got about four soldiers lifting her, two more lifting the charcoal fire, which was a mobile one, and she was lifted together with the charcoal fire. Never were they separated, and put in the back of a three-ton lorry as one piece. I felt sorry for them in a way, having to leave their village. They were going to a tented place, which obviously I very much doubt if they would enjoy. Chinese People's Army put banners up at Christmas. What did they say? The Chinese People's Army wish a happy Christmas to the Royal Norfolk Regiment. On big poles, smack in front of our positions, large letters so everyone could read it. And at the bottom of the poles, there were presents, handkerchiefs, cards, all propaganda. The cards with Americans around a swimming pool and saying something like, you know, what are you doing here? Look at these. Enjoying themselves at home. Why don't you go off and join? That sort of stuff. Pencils. Pens. Rubbers. All that sort of junk. Pencil sharpeners. Note paper all headed. There's quite a selection of it. I think in the Regimental Museum. Some of it's kept, I know. We were told not to keep it, we had to hand it in. But of course, most people did keep some bits. One thing when I got to the 3-inch mortar platoon, we created, because we were fairly static for a long period of time. And we created the Baron Bipod. The Baron Bipod was a pub. It was on a reverse slope. And got a bar. We made beer mugs by using a squash bottle with... The squash bottle's got two ribs. And if you rub a bit of wire very hard in between the two ribs, then dump it into ice-cold water, the top snaps off. And that held exactly a pint. We got a barman whose parents owned a pub in Norfolk. And we could have short drinks in the bit of the bottle that had snapped off cleanly. You rubbed it in the sand to take the edges off, any sharp edges. Put the cork back in the bottle and put the top of a cigarette tin, which made a stand, and you'd got a glass of short drinks out of the one bottle, squash bottle. We got settles, tables, and there was a sort of larder. We had American combat packs, sea rations, I think they were called. And, oh, there was frankfurter and beans, ham and beans, Irish stew, Versa. People had their favourites. I quite enjoyed frankfurter chunks and beans. Had three meals, a day's worth, in each pack. There was also a packet of cigarettes, matches, toilet paper, jelly, sweets, chocolate, chewing gum, desserts in the form of tin fruit. Anything that anybody didn't like, we'd got two shelves organised in the Baron bipod, and they would bring the food in that they didn't like and put it in that section. And so you could bring in something which you're not too keen on and swap it for something else. That was in one of the alcoves. In another area, people, of course, were sent paperback books out from England. So we created a library, one in, one out. And somebody got a paperback book or this or wherever, whatever, they'd put it in the library and take one out. So it was a sort of a mutual swapping place. Had a dartboard sent out by players with a darts mat and about four sets of darts. Got a light over the darts board. You could really, inside that place, apart from the fact that everyone was wearing uniform, you could virtually imagine, with a bit of smoke around the place, you were in a pub. Nice atmosphere. People used to come. They were only allowed in by invitation, of course, but from other units, and have a game of cards in there. Or
was it just for the mortar platoon?
Yeah. It's, well, machine gun platoon came in on it as well, but we were the actual builders. And it was quite a bit of a showpiece, actually. People would come around and drop in and have a drink.
It sounds like a recreation centre.
Yes, but if you're in the front line on a reverse slope, you can't really call it a recreation centre. It was a get-together place, yes. But you see, whatever happened, you had to leave at least 50% of people standing too anyway. It wasn't a question of everyone being able to up sticks and sort of all shove off and do something somewhere. It was just one of the things. I mean, the MTO, Wolf of Bloomfield, he organised a cinema on a hillside with seating and various other bits and pieces, and managed to scrounge, beg, borrow, steal. Quite a bit of it was covered, in fact, so that if it rained, we more or less got away with it. And there was quite some, there were some good films. They were fairly frequent. Two shows a night, normally. Half people would go along for one night. The other half for the first show. And they'd be go back and relieve the other half, who'd come back and see the second show. And one particular night, just near the cinema, the Americans brought up some Persuaders. Now, the Persuaders were 155mm dirty great guns. And the idea to bring them right forward, obviously, was so they could get deeper penetration. But somebody in their wisdom hadn't quite twigged that having got them that far forward, they were, of course, in range of the Chinese artillery. They had only been firing for about 10 minutes when all the crap and creation came down, including around the blasted cinema, which annoyed us not a little. I've never seen people bug out so quickly. Half of them didn't even take their vehicles. The MTO, ever diligent, managed to get himself virtually a brand new Jeep, which mysteriously disappeared from the area of shellfire. And next day we got various Americans wandering around saying, anyone seen the Brigadier General's Jeep? Well, the bumpers were one way, wheels were another, something else was something else. That had quietly disappeared overnight. It was a good vehicle. Didn't put it all back together. It was basically used for, well, brand new spares for our vehicles. The Jeep really proved itself there. It was fantastic. Give you an idea of the jumping about a bit, but the way the water rose when it rained hard. I was driving across a valley when it was pouring with rain, and the rain had eased up, but the water was pouring off the mountains. And I was on this track, roadway, going across the valley, when the water started to rise, the valley started to fill up a bit. The road was ploughed by about 2 feet above the valley floor as such. We watched with horror, so we speeded up a bit, as this water just kept coming up. Eventually, we were more than three quarters of the way across. There was only about 200 yards to go, but blasted water reached the engine. Well, with the best will in the world, Jeeps don't like being driven with the engine underwater. I'd got a radio on the back with a 14-foot aerial, but we had to abandon the vehicle. Fortunately, there wasn't a current, or didn't seem to be as such, so the vehicle wasn't washed away, but it stayed on the road. So we staggered the rest of the way to the nearest bank. Got a recovery vehicle. By the time we got it back, about half an hour later, the only thing that could be seen was about 4 foot of the aerial above the water. So I used to be a strong swimmer. So I got down, got a bit of rope round my waist. Well, light cord to start with. Round my waist, swam out to the Jeep, guided by the aerial. Got it round an attachment on the front of the vehicle. The recovery vehicle was sort of heaved it back out onto the side. with a quick dry out, said something to the old Jeep. Away she went, carried on driving. But the speed which that water came up. And, of course, there's a lot of wildlife in it. In the water, that is. You know, the old snakes and rats and this, that and the other, all swimming for... All the trees sticking out of the water are festooned with wildlife. Quite intriguing. Yeah. I'd mentioned the wooden bridge over the Imjin.
Can you repeat that? Because yes. You told me about that off the tape.
That's
you
right.
Haven't told me, you haven't said on tape about how the Americans constructed
yeah.
this bridge.
Well, I don't know how high, it would be about 25, 30 feet, I suppose, with wooden pylons, square wooden pylons, about 6 or 7 of them, going over the Imjin. Prior to that, the only way of crossing the Imjin, in the summer it was just fordable in the old place, but was in fact pontoon bridges. Anyway, the bridge was built, but with the main beams or supports for the pylons were square on to the flow of water, as opposed to being edge on, which meant that they were a natural trap for anything that was coming down, and of course offered so much more resistance to the water that was flowing, to the degree that at one stage it was almost like a bow, as far as a bow and arrow is concerned, bowed round from between one side of the Imjin and the other, because the Imjin was really quite wide. And it lasted the first year, I think. It was either year 2 or year 3 when it was washed away. Couldn't take it. Which is understandable. Stupid, stupid way to build it. Still, there we are. The Imjin in the summer, spring, was crystal clear. And with lovely sandy beaches, it was almost like sort of being at the seaside in many respects. Really super. There was an Ensa show coming out fairly soon after the bridge had been built. And the girls in the Ensa show came out and were waving. And then they looked a little bit harder to realise that on the sandy banks beside the Imjin, there were somewhere in the region of 400 or 500 naked men displayed to view. Not, I suppose, that there was, I suppose one could say there'd be safety in numbers, but I think, you know, it's just too many to take it all in. However, no one batted an eyelid. I mean, what the hell? Elsie and Doris Waters came out and brought the house down. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner. Shells going off in the background. A sort of an amphitheatre formed by the hills. Hundreds and hundreds of blokes. Dressed as pearly queens. Seeing the guts out. The money wasn't too bright out in Korea. I think there were some Turks out there. If they were there, I think they were the only ones on lower pay than us. I met a US Marine on rest and recuperation leave in Tokyo. And the relief on tax and his combat pay, the relief on his income tax or revenue that he paid, was more than my entire pay. It's unbelievable. Yes, quite a place was Tokyo.
In what way? In what way?
Cool. We didn't rest. We might have recuperated a bit. But wow. We stayed. Opted to stay. It was slightly more expensive. At the Marunouchi Hotel in Tokyo. The Marunouchi Hotel is a sort of Savoy, really, of Tokyo. Well, it was then. Absolutely fantastic place. It was run by the Australians, and extremely well. One checked in at reception on arrival, and there was a most attractive Australian girl who, I think the expression is, I chatted up a bit and invited her for food that night. That's opposed to the standard food. There was, I'd already gathered, somewhere when one paid a little bit extra, but got one got slightly better selection of food, which he accepted. We, during the course of our meal, we were discussing her fiancé, who's a squadron leader in the RAF, and my wife, daughter, who of course I'd not seen, Monique, and she said during the course of the meal, well, you interested in having a car? I said, gosh, they cost the earth here. I said, I've told you, get in a Japanese taxi, go from one side of the road to the other, and it's about £1.50 or £2. He said, yes. He said, I'm talking about a hotel car. Hotel car? She said, yes, air conditioned, driver who speaks good English, 10 shillings a day. I said, how much? 10 shillings a day. He said, but you're not to spread it around, and you're to use it and take other people out in it as well. But don't tell them how much it costs or how you got it. I said, yes, that suits me beautifully. Well, of course, it worked like a charm. Everybody thought I'd gone mad hiring a car, and insisted on buying drinks, which I didn't object to at all, of course. However, I said, the other thing is, most of the aircraft are pretty well booked up. I said, you might have to stay 2 extra days. I said, I wouldn't object at all, which I did, stay for 2 extra days. Well, there was a long bar called the Marble Bar in the Marunouchi, and it was distinctly Commonwealth Division officers only. Americans would give their eye teeth to be invited into the place because it was so swish and so nice. It was one thing, I must admit, where we really had an advantage. Well, Tokyo, there were shows, cabarets, a place called the Showboat, which was out of bounds. So I went to it. The Showboat had 1, 2, 3, about 5 decks. Each deck, where you might have imagined there'd be a dance floor in the centre. In fact, there was a sort of a hole, so you could stand on the top deck and you would look down through the middle where there was this hole over 4 other decks. Any dancing was done on the other bit of the deck as away from the main centre. Girls in boats came around the edge of the, I don't know what you'd call it. I'm calling it a hole for want of something better, the pit in the centre. They permanently selling drinks. As one sat down at a table, depending on the number of you, if there's two, two girls would arrive and sit down with you. They were there to entertain you. You hadn't got to buy them a drink. If you didn't like them, you just shook your head, smiled, off they went, and two more would come until you ended up two that you were satisfied with, in appearance or whatever. It really was the most incredible thing. I got a message that somebody on the third deck, a Canadian, had found out that I was there. Well, I knew he was from the ammunition depot in Korea. And he was having a private party on the third deck. Would I like to join him? So, after a period of time, I did that. But as I said, it was really the most extraordinary place.